welcome in to another special podcast right here on Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zaglul, and on today's show, we'll be welcoming in a very special guest to talk about NCAA March Madness, some NFL news, plus his amazing broadcasting career. Before we get started, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zaglul. Today's show is brought to you by Moochie World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Moochie World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Get ready for the team's 2019 season as they celebrate their 20th anniversary. Purchase tickets right now at 708-489-2255. Again, that's 708-489-2255 for your chance to be a part of history this summer in Crestwood. Now, before we get to the interview, here's your Sports Talk Chicago recap. In baseball, the Chicago Cubs have questions surrounding their team that need answers. In Yu Darvish's season debut, he lasted only 2 2/3 innings, giving up 2 runs while walking 7 batters. And later in that same game, Carl Edwards Jr. gave up an eventual game-winning home run. Look, I know the Cubs don't have much money to spend, but it wouldn't be a bad idea to listen and try and get Craig Kimbrel. And I know he's a closer, and the Cubs have Brandon Morrow at the moment, but right now this team needs bullpen help. And as for Yu Darvish, he has confirmed to myself and to everyone who's watched Cubs games that his contract and his signing has been a total waste of money. On to the South Side, Eloy Jimenez recorded his first hit of his MLB career this past weekend, although he started off quite slow to begin the season. Nevertheless, that hit means a lot to White Sox fans, because now the future is here, and Sox fans are beginning to realize that they've got lots of young prospects that are promising and that are ready to make an impact at the major league level. And finally, onto the ice we go as the Blackhawks sit 6 points out of a playoff spot with just 4 games to go. They sustained a tough loss against the LA Kings in overtime this past weekend. And Hawks fans, whether you want to hear it or not, they needed to win that game. And now that they didn't, you can say goodbye to their postseason chances. This has been your Sports Talk Chicago recap. And now, enjoy today's interview with my special guest. He began his sports media career in 2001 as an intern at WFAN in New York. After stints at NBA TV, YES Network, and NBC Sports, he became the radio voice of the Los Angeles Lakers at 25 years old. During that time, he also served as a studio host on NFL Network. Today, he calls NFL and NCAA basketball games for CBS and NBA games for TNT, while serving as the preseason TV voice for the LA Chargers. Please welcome Spiro Dedis to the show. Spiro, how are you doing today, and thank you for being here on the show.
Hey, John. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, to start today, Spiro, I have to ask, how's your bracket looking right now? Because this past weekend, we've seen 3 number 1 seeds go down in North Carolina, Gonzaga, and Duke. Plus, number 2-seeded Kentucky is now out, losing to Auburn 2 days ago. What are your thoughts on all 4 of these teams losing in the Elite Eight, and how will that affect the outcome of the tournament championship?
Well, first of all, I think I'm one of 10 people left in America that do not fill out brackets for March Madness. I have done it for kind of probably 10 years. This is no time. You know, we get our assignments, and while everyone's kind of sitting and messing around with their brackets, we're prepping for the games. So luckily, I don't have to go through the agony of watching my bracket fail miserably. As far as this last weekend, you know, I mean, to me, that was a perfect kind of summation of what this tournament is, and there's a reason why they call it March Madness. And anytime you've got a single elimination, John, anything's possible, especially, you know, in this era of one and done with, you know, so many of the marquee teams kind of thrown together in a way, you know, like Duke, for instance, you know, like Kentucky last year, you know, super talented teams, but, you know, as opposed to a team like Michigan State that's had a group that's had a chance to play together for 2 or 3 years, that's seasoned together, battle-tested, it's not the case with some of these teams like Duke this year, you know, is the latest example. So in some ways I'm surprised. In other ways, I'm really not, because these teams that are moving on to Minneapolis are all really well-balanced, well-constructed teams. Texas Tech comes to mind. You've got one of their truly bright rising stars in the coaching ranks in Chris Beard. They're a team that lost a number of key guys, but I think the culture that he has in place there allowed that group to really step into a void this year, replace the guys they needed to, and they're a well-deserving team. I mean, that's a team that obviously can win it all. And, you know, it's actually fun to see some of these smaller schools, you know, smaller in quotation marks, have some success and get their moment in the spotlight.
Speaking of smaller schools or schools that aren't necessarily known for basketball, for me, Auburn comes to mind, and they've had an impressive journey to where they are today. In the SEC tournament, they beat Tennessee. They come into the NCAA tournament, and they beat Kansas in the round of 32 before going on to win against both North Carolina and Kentucky. From what you've seen, why has Auburn done so well, and how far do you see them going now that they're in the Final Four?
Yeah, they've had an incredible run. I think it starts with Bruce Pearl, such a respected guy. I know he's had some, you know, things off the floor that he's had to fight through, and, you know, some by his own making. But just in terms of basketball and teaching, I think Bruce Pearl is in a select group of very special coaches. He's a really skilled motivator. I think we've seen that. I think he, multiple times with some of the adversity that team has had to face, he's rallied that group. And when you love your coach and when you love to sacrifice for your coach, I think anything's possible, because clearly they've got the skill that's needed at this time of year to succeed. And they just seem to be on an emotional ride that has really taken them to a level that maybe not even they expected they could get to. I think once we saw what they did in the SEC tournament, John, I think, you know, they became a serious player. And now, based off that, you know, maybe we shouldn't be surprised at where this team sits and the opportunity that they have in front of them.
Who do you have winning this tournament now that the Final Four is set?
Boy, you know, I've seen Texas Tech a bunch. I really like this team. You know, Michigan State as well. Obviously, it starts with Tom Izzo, and Cassius Winston is such a special talent. You know, it's awesome to see a senior get to this point. And that's the other part of this. It is great to see things kind of come back around to the upperclassmen. You know, for a long time, it had been just about the super freshmen and, you know, these Zion Williamson-type players who are obviously terrific and super fun to watch. But, you know, there's something to be said for being rewarded for sticking with your team and your program for 4 years. And it's really cool to see some of the upperclassmen, you know, get to this point and to have a chance to really, you know, become immortalized in the sport. And I don't know if it happens for Cassius Winston at Michigan State, but it's just really cool to see that kind of dynamic. And I'm kind of skirting around your question, man. You know what? I'm gonna go nuts. I'm gonna take Texas Tech. I think the Red Raiders are. There's just something about this team. I think it's fate, and I truly believe in Chris Beard as a coach.
Spiro Dedis here on Sports Talk Chicago. And Spiro, moving to the gridiron and talking about some Chicago Bears news, the team has recently traded away Pro Bowl running back Jordan Howard to the Eagles in exchange for a late round draft pick. And the idea was that Howard wasn't necessarily fitting in with Matt Nagy's offensive scheme and needed an environment that would foster his development. Where do you stand on the situation surrounding the Howard trade and how the Bears handled it?
I just think it's the way that the evaluation of the running back position has evolved in the NFL. I think we see it in the way teams draft running backs, you know, avoiding using a high pick on a back, you know, with the exception of Saquon Barkley. I think it's evidence that how they're paying running backs, the pay scale has changed. The shelf life of a running back in the NFL obviously is minimal because of the pounding that these guys take. And, you know, in the instance of Jordan Howard, I don't know what the intricacies were of that, but it just seems like if there's not a right fit between running back and head coach, you know, it's just kind of next man up. I mean, there's so many of these talented guys out there. I just don't think a team is going to be that patient. I think they're going to move on and to try to find the right chemistry, the right mix with a player.
Now that Howard is gone, who do you see replacing him? Because the Bears did recently sign Mike Davis. Will he become his replacement, or do you see them looking to the draft for some help?
That's a million-dollar question. I have no idea, to be honest with you. I just think it comes down to system. I think, you know, Coach Nagy will evaluate that. Exactly the kind of running back he wants, and it'll just be a matter of right fit, A, in that offensive scheme, and B, financially, what kind of deal can they make? You know, can they get him at the right price? And, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. But obviously, if you're a Bears fan, you know, things are looking a lot brighter than they were a couple of years ago. I think it's great for the league that Chicago is kind of back and, you know, becoming a serious threat in the NFC. It seems like it's been a while. And, you know, I just think it's a win-win for the league and for obviously for the folks in Chicago.
Going to the rest of the NFL, there have been many other noteworthy moves, but I think the team that has made the most headlines this past offseason is the Cleveland Browns. I mean, when you acquire someone like Odell Beckham Jr. and you pair him with players like Jarvis Landry, Baker Mayfield, and Kareem Hunt, you're bound for success. What are your impressions on what the Browns have done, and what's your prediction for the team's 2019 season?
You know, you talk about a franchise that's been down. Obviously, Cleveland was at the top of the list. Unbelievable. I think it starts with John Dorsey. You know, such a respected football guy among people around the league. And I think just talking to people in different buildings, you know, covering the sport for the last, you know, 5-6 years, John Dorsey, I don't think there's any doubt, one of the most, maybe top three most respected talent evaluators in the sport. And what he's done in Cleveland in the span of about 2+ years is nothing short of incredible. Now, obviously, you have to give some of the credit to the previous regime. You know, I know Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta took a lot of, you know, slings and arrows, and rightfully so, but they did put the franchise in a position to be where they are now. Now, John Dorsey has taken that to an even different level, you know, with his drafting of Baker Mayfield and everything he's done at both sides of the football, I think, are nothing short of spectacular. I do think that this Odell Beckham situation, you know, while the initial reaction is, wow, this is amazing, and, you know, the potential is so great, let's not forget Odell is a volatile guy. You know, you hope and, you know, think that the potential for this could be amazing and through the roof, but, you know, let's wait and see, because he's not the kind of guy that's going to walk into the locker room and kind of tiptoe around things. So how that volatility is withheld within that locker room, that, you know, let's face it, they haven't had a chance to really build a culture. So, you know, if Odell Beckham is walking into the New England Patriots locker room, you can, I think, contain that because you have a culture that's built. I think they're still building that in Cleveland. They're still in the early stages of that. So that could be something that bears watching. But in terms of just an NFL excitement level standpoint, I think it's going to be a team that's really, really fun to watch.
Speaking of Baker Mayfield for a moment, I know that you were on the call when Baker stared down Hugh Jackson during the Browns' win over the Bengals last season. How uncomfortable was that for you as a broadcaster? And also, was Baker right or wrong for what he did?
You know, I think it's just part of who Baker is. First of all, you know, it wasn't uncomfortable. It was surprising to see that, you know, considering the relationship that those two guys had. I think initially I was a bit surprised and a bit taken by it, but, you know, then I think to really understand Baker is to know that that's just how he's wired. You know, he feeds off that kind of animosity towards his opponent. And, you know, he felt deep down in his core that Hugh Jackson taking the Cincinnati job so quickly and joining the enemy was an affront to Baker and that entire organization. And so, you know, it was interesting to see. I think it's kind of what makes him great, and why you love him if he's your guy, and why you dislike him if he's not. And I think it's great for the league. I think we need rivalries, and that should be one that will be very strong for a number of years.
Sticking with your personal broadcasting career, I'd mentioned most of your stops along the way in your intro, but how did you get to where you are today? What's your journey been like, and how have you become such a recognizable voice in sports broadcasting?
Wow. You know, John, I get that question, and first and foremost, it's good fortune. It's right place, right time. You know, there's so many guys that want to do this for a living and that are just as talented as I am, if not more talented, that never get that first break. So, you know, first and foremost, I just think I've been really fortunate to get some of the positions I've had. You know, I grew up in North Jersey dreaming of being Marv Albert one day and Mike Breen, and, you know, to be in a position a couple of years later, you know, out of school to become the radio voice of the Lakers was, you know, it was a moment that I'll never forget, getting that call and getting that opportunity. A couple of years later, ending up with the Knicks and being able to say that I'm working my dream job, you know, has been incredible. The CBS opportunities calling the NFL and being a part of March Madness since 2010. You know, it's, I say it all the time. I said, something very bad is going to happen to me right there because one day, because I can't be this lucky for that long, you know? So I'm just, honestly, I'm just trying to live in the moment, you know, really enjoy where I'm at and appreciate where I am in life. But to answer your question, there's no blueprint. I just think if you want to do this for a living, you have to really commit to it. You've got to be determined. You've got to build relationships. You've got to work at your craft every day and be real committed to that. And then just hope you get lucky, to be honest with you.
What's been the most exciting game that you've been able to broadcast? Because I know that you were on the call for two Loyola Chicago games in the NCAA tournament last year, both of which ended in buzzer-beating wins. Where does that experience rank for you? And is there another game or moment that tops it?
Oh, it was amazing. It was really amazing to be a part of that run with Sister Jean. You know, you kind of become the soundtrack for a moment that's immortalized for a school. And that was really, really cool. You know, we got a chance to know the coaches and the players who were involved in that. We've met Sister Jean, which was awesome. Certainly that's at the top of the list. I always go back to my days with the Lakers just because when you work for a team, you know, you become invested emotionally in the group, as opposed to when you work for CBS, you know, you're kind of like a hired gun. You know, you call a couple of teams 1 week, the next week you're off to another city and another game, which is obviously exciting in and of itself. But when you work for a team like I was with the Lakers and to be joining that organization just as they were coming back up, you know, Phil Jackson's second go-around, just as they were retooling, and to be a part of two Lakers-Celtics NBA finals, one of which went seven games in 2010, probably still at the top of my list. And then, you know, we grow up as kids, we see championship celebrations on television, and to then be in one of those locker rooms with the champagne flowing was something that was surreal and that was pretty special to be a part of.
And before we let you go today, Spiro, I wanted to ask about the Bills versus Colts blizzard game back in 2017. Now, the game ended in overtime on a LeSean McCoy rushing touchdown, but tell me about the entire experience. I mean, there was probably at least a foot of snow visibly seen on the field. Adam Vinatieri made an improbable kick in windy conditions. What was it like for you to broadcast that game?
It was incredible. It really was. We couldn't see the field markers. We had no idea where the ball was at times. I was amazed at our camera people and our camera operators on the field, just navigating up and down the playing surface. There was a stretch in the game where our cart camera, which is actually the camera that's on that cart that goes up and down the sideline that gives the viewing fan at home their main view of the field, that thing got snowed in at some point. So during the game, there were grounds crew people in the stadium frantically trying to shovel the cart camera so it can just get up and down the field. So we had to use different angles. We had to shoot field goals from the opposite end that we're used to. It took really a gargantuan effort from our production team. And I just, you know, I shook their hands afterwards. It was one of the most amazing kind of collective group efforts I've ever seen from a production team. And to be a part of it and to get to call that game, the way it ended was incredible. You know, a walk-off, run-off touchdown by LeSean McCoy just kind of added to what was really a wild day that I think Adam Archuleta and I and our entire crew will be talking about for a long time.
Well, Spiro, thank you so much for being here on the show. Some great insights and great stories, and hope to have you on again soon.
My pleasure, John. Anytime.
What an honor it was to have Spiro Ditas on today's show as we talked with him about some NCAA March Madness, some NFL news, plus his amazing broadcasting career. And what I enjoyed most about talking with Spiro today is just listening to his experiences. I mean, he's called lots of significant games in his young career. And as I alluded to there in my last question, sure, some experiences have been odd. They've been a bit wacky. But still, in the end, they've been significant. So I truly appreciate Spiro taking the time to document those experiences on today's show. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at @ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zaglua. Also, make sure to subscribe to the website. You can find the subscription box on the homepage of the site. Simply type in your email, click yes on the confirmation email, and from there, you'll be subscribed. You'll receive every new podcast and article directly to your email. And remember, Sports Talk Chicago is now on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago, and every podcast from the 2018-19 calendar year is now available. Feel free to leave us a 5-star rating and or write a review. And finally, if you enjoyed today's show, make sure to check out my new radio show. Every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHPK-FM Chicago. You'll still hear my same hard-hitting Chicago sports opinions. Plus, we'll add some national sports stories, special segments, and of course, special guest interviews on most shows. That's every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHPK-FM Chicago. Thank you again for listening in to today's show, and have a great day.